Perez's vision for Real Madrid is not to be playing fucking Palace and Brentford.
The Fantasy Football Show. Hello, Patreons. It's Friday, and it's been a little while since we've done a Money in Football, but we are today doing a Money in Football.
Good morning, everyone. It's dirty early.
It is.
Which is all good in the
it's
hood.
It's not that early, 8:40. It's fairly normal. Live at this sort of time. Maybe we don't talk about football at this sort of time.
I've got a question for you. All right? It's not money and football related, but he's kind of money related. It probably belongs on a Q&A, but we might not do a Q&A for a while. How much would you be prepared to pay for a shit?
For a shit?
Yeah. Say you had to be charged for a shit. How much would you be prepared to pay?
In a pub or somewhere? Like, public restroom,
like,
you mean?
Say every time you... Even if you was in your house, if you had to shit every time, I don't know, the cost of water or whatever. If you had to pay for the shit or not shit, like, how much would you pay for the shit?
Let's assume, worst case scenario, 3 shits a day, 30 days in a month, 90 shits in a month, £100 a pound of shit.
Pound of shit, yeah? Okay.
If I had to come out of my monthly salary, like my monthly income, I wouldn't want to be using more than £100 a month of my disposable income on shitting.
Okay.
So, and that's probably maximum. I don't know. People don't shit 3 times a day, 30 days.
What about if it was a one-off, say, you know, one shit you were desperate for a week or something, you know, so do what, 25 quid for a shit or something? Like, what's the value to you of you?
What's the alternative? Well, I shit myself.
Yeah, so like, say,
oh, I'd shit myself.
Say you're gonna be you shit yourself rather than pay 25 quid.
Yeah, not 25 quid. Because a pair of boxers, and I really like the Under Armour boxers, really comfy, are maybe 12 quid, 14 quid. Again, now it depends on location. If I'm 5 minutes away from my house and I can just deal with it, I will just manage for 5 minutes. If I'm in the middle of a public environment, like a West Ham game or something, I'd probably fucking pay the money, you know?
Okay.
So, yeah. What inspired the question?
I was thinking about it on an Uber this morning.
Okay.
Because I decided to get an Uber because I knew you wanted to record early.
Oh, okay. And, I wasn't that desperate to record.
And it's like, there's no traffic on the roads because none of the kids were at school or anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But to be honest, if I'd not done that dump this morning, I probably wouldn't have got the Uber.
Right.
That's what I was thinking.
Right.
So it was basically a 12 quid. It was a 12 quid shit.
I was going to say, was it Uber?
I paid 12 quid to shit this morning. That's what made me think about it.
But sometimes it is worth it. Money in football. We've got two topics to cover off today. One is the Chelsea amortization rule. It's kind of been Chelsea with the team that were taking advantage of it. So it's been kind of called the Chelsea
loophole.
Loophole. Like the Bosman rule. He wasn't the only one, but it ended up being all about him. And also, obviously, we've had news on the Super League or potential Super League and the A22 and whatever they want to call themselves yesterday as well. Chelsea loophole. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. We know, obviously, when they were buying players, they were spreading transfer fees across the length of the contract, which is normal.
Yes.
When you start giving out 8, 7, 8, 9 year contracts, that was not normal. Relative to the 3, 4, 5 year contracts that were being offered previously. And in essence, what you're doing is if it's a 4 year contract or an 8 year contract, you're halving the transfer fee for FFP purposes, like halving the transfer fee. So it's like saying Moyes Caicedo costs the same as Lucas Paqueta. 100 million over 8 years, 50 million over 4 years. For the purposes of accounts, they cost the same. So it can be quite a big difference in what you're paying and what you're not.
Other than that, so in terms of an annual account, yes, sure. But also after 4 years, you stop paying that guy. Whereas Chelsea is still paying it for another 4 years.
In salary?
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is just the transfer fee part of it. I was considering, like, you're splitting that. And of course, yeah, but then we might lose them after 4 years for free. Whereas Chelsea still have that tied-in advantage of knowing that whatever happens, they'll get a transfer fee. Like January, for example, West Ham are talking about offering contracts to Fornals and Fabianski purely so that we can get a transfer fee in the summer, which is good business, but also the problem of shorter contracts. Like, they do run out, and we've seen a lot of players run out. So, I mean, there was a lot of talk about it when it happened, right? And people are like, oh, hang on, here's a loophole. So it got closed.
Yeah, and it's quite a simplistic one, but I thought it was worth a conversation because I'd seen enough kind of chat going around sort of in the Chelsea channel last week and stuff. And we will talk the Super League a little bit. So I think we'll probably cut this down and condense it. So you've kind of just done the amortisation spiel for anyone who's... You guys must be familiar with the amortisation
stuff now. I think people
really
are now for what's been happening, spreading the cost, yeah.
So... in Chelsea's case, obviously, these long contracts came about. I think you're probably looking at Mykhailo Mudryk and Enzo Fernandez might forever be the most amortised player contracts of all time, yeah. Possibly. It's going to be fascinating to see if Chelsea do a lot of business in January. I suspect it's possibly going to be one of the big headlines of the January transfer windows. What Chelsea do, are they going to have to actually start selling? These Conor Gallagher rumours not going away, mate.
To where?
To anywhere.
Okay.
Because he's a player who's come from
homegrown,
youth academy.
100% profit.
100% profit on a sale. His name keeps coming up. Ain't selling Reece James at the moment, are they? Unfortunately.
How would you feel about your club buying Reece James?
probably not as good as I would about signing Conor Gallagher.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that.
Well, it's just, it's unfortunate, right? Reece James is a top player. But I've also got Pedro Porro, right? I've got more of a non-Conor Gallagher player problem than a non-Reece James player problem. In any case, this loophole has been closed. And I think one of the things people have found really interesting about it is at this Premier League meeting last week, which included several items on agenda, such as funding money to the EFL, funding money into the women's game, the new television deal, which I think is something we might come back onto as well, because the growth on that deal is not what people might think it is on paper.
Yep.
Because the reason the value has kind of stayed at what it was from back in 2018 is the extra 60 games in the package,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's not actually gone up. At the moment, it's almost like, we've got the same. So TV money is not growing domestically. It is in terms of overseas sales, which is where the Premier League's really making their buck in TV money now. But the first item on agenda at this meeting was this loophole in terms of whether to close this amortisation down to a maximum of 5 years.
Yeah. Just standardise it for everybody.
Correct. And one of the things that really caught people's attention was the fact that Chelsea voted to close it.
Yep.
So Chelsea have exposed the loophole, but then voted to... close it themselves. You know, hang on, so what's going on here? Well, it's quite clever, really. They've exposed the loophole and now they've closed it so that no one else can use it. Plus, the real reason it's been done is because UEFA's ruling in the summer determined that amortisation on contracts could only be a maximum of 5 years.
Yeah.
So if Chelsea want to go back into European competition, which...
They've got to play a bit better first.
Yes. Thank you for finishing my sentence. Yeah. They'll have to abide by that. So we'll have to go over 5 years anyway. So so then, I mean, would you consider, Suj, filing your accounts?
They don't have to retrospectively go back and change any of the amortization they've done now. It's only new signing moving forward.
Would you have considered for Chelsea an idea where they would file accounts for UEFA and file accounts for the Premier League? Would that be...
They would have to do that.
No. But what I mean is under one ruling of 5 year amortisation and another that's got no restriction on amortisation,
yeah,
which the Premier League
didn't
have.
They could create two sets of accounts.
You're giving yourself work though, aren't you?
Yeah.
In terms of your working.
It's not huge, but you are giving yourself a bit of work. It's unnecessary. And 5 years is kind of sort of long enough. I don't know if they've necessarily got cold feet about this 8 year contract stuff now as well, looking at the state that they're in and where they're at, and they're like, oh, okay, have we dug ourselves a long hole, long-term hole?
Just take a step back from football here for a moment with amortisation. Do we think it's right that it's been... here's the thing, right? I know people have like kind of laughed it and scoffed it, but Chelsea actually haven't broken any rules at all in this amortisation of the money of the contracts, right? I mean, players don't get... When they sign a contract, they don't get the fee... If they sign an 8.5 year contract, they don't get the fee in one lump, right? These guys are going to be paid over 8.5 years. Like, is it correct that
that's
restricted?
The buying club? The selling club?
No, the player.
The player's salary is getting paid over that time, but the selling club might be getting paid over 2 years, 1 year, one instalment, 3 years. Who knows what the cash terms is very different to the amortization terms.
So it doesn't relate to the salary at all. It's literally the transfer fee.
Okay. Yeah, it's got nothing to do with the salary. It's literally just the transfer fee. Should it be standardized? Personal opinion, yes. And I think it should be something that is looked into and adopted across all business, not just football and the Premier League.
So what would you want?
Say we've got two paper bag companies. Use that example because
I've got a paper bag company.
I sell paperbacks. And we turn over £200,000. We got cost of £100,000. We made £100,000 profit. Or we do exactly the same, but in business number two, in both businesses, we've bought £50,000 worth of pallets. Pallets is a pallet racking. £50,000 worth of pallet racking. In one business, I whack it through straight away, £50,000 profit now. And the other one, I whack it through over 10 years. That pallet racking will last 10 years. That's £5,000 a year. I've made £95,000 profit. Who's done better? Cash terms, they've both done the same because you've had to pay for it. And the problem is you've got anybody can do anything with their depreciation and amortization right now. And it's not madly relevant for independently owned small businesses, but it kind of is. But it is relevant for publicly traded companies and so on and so on. Because then people are buying shares in these companies based on financial information they're getting, and different people are using different rules is not right. In a small business, though, I can manipulate my profit at the end of the year for the accountant, for the bank, for example, if I wanted to borrow more money by pissing about with depreciation amortization. And what you don't want is different people doing different things to paint different pictures and then other people making decisions off it. So if I decide to go and invest in shares in a business because I've given some financial information, but actually they've been playing the rules differently, I don't like that. So I think there should be standardization across it so that everybody can read a set of accounts in the same way. The same as Derby and the way they were doing their things and trying to depreciate things in different ways with players and stuff. I think there should be a certain level of standardization or a real obligation that, okay, this is the standardized rules for depreciation amortization. If you're outside of that, you have to declare it on your accounts, i.e. motor vehicles, maximum 10 years. Infrastructure, maximum 20 years or something like that. Machinery, maximum 20 years. I think there should be computers, 2 years maybe. What's a computer last? 2 to 4 years? They don't last that long. You should have standardized rules for it all and then let people declare if they want to do it differently, but at least then you have the information.
Standardized rules would be what? Like a regulator?
Yeah, it'd be just like you have to file your accounts at company's house, right? Every year. So there's standard accounting practice. There's certain things you can't do in accounts. There are accounting rules and regulations and things you can't do.
Football regulator, probably a little bit more in part two of this.
Yeah, but then you're talking about bringing forward like revenues from the future. You shouldn't be allowed to do that. There should be certain rules in how accounts are displayed that should unify. So everybody's looking, comparing apples for apples. That's ultimately what you want to do is compare apples for apples. Because this doesn't work the opposite way, right? You buy an 8-year contract player, you spread it over five. You buy a 3-year contract player, you can't spread it over five. You can't extend it over 5 years. You can only decrease it.
That's what I'm saying. Is it actually even fair? I mean, to be honest, with Chelsea spreading it over 8 years, like people scoffed at it because people were more like, okay, yeah, sure, it's creative accounting. But going into the last few years of that, you've only given yourself a problem. True. It's almost like a Liverpool, isn't it?
Yeah.
In a roundabout way, not to Barcelona unless, levels, but
of course, you sell the player for at least as much as he's on your books for by the time you get around to it. And I think they're working off the assumption that they won't take too big a hit on transfer fees. If Mudryk doesn't make it, they might still get 40 or 45 for him or something like that.
Yep.
Let's see. But I think it's a good thing that they've standardized it.
I think because we want to do a bit of Super League chat, just a couple more points to clarify this off in case people aren't aware of a couple of bits of news. So the first thing is on in terms of if there's any legislative change of ruling with the Premier League, it needs 14 out of 20 clubs to agree to vote. This was passed off with 15, which obviously included Chelsea. Five five clubs obviously wanted something else. There were two clubs who abstained, and there was three clubs who wanted it to basically stand. And what I think those five clubs wanted, and we don't know who those five clubs were, by the way. If someone does know, let me know. But we don't know, as far as I can find. They basically wanted it to be closed and backdated, so that Chelsea had to like change to go. So the Mudryk and the Fernandes and all those signings had to go back and amortize it over 5 years. Which, if that had happened, would have put Chelsea in
fucked.
A
world of pain, mate.
Yeah, here's what it would have been. Minimum 10-point deduction.
Yeah, exactly that.
As we
basically we know what they spent, $1.5 billion. Obviously, they've had outgoings as well. I don't know what their net spend is. What's their net spend? $1 billion or whatever. What's their net spend? Maybe you call it 500 million.
The churn has been insane, hasn't it?
Yeah, but you're talking about then 100 million net loss in transfer fees a year if it's over 5 years, immediately if it's a 500 million net. So, yeah, mad.
So, I wanted to raise a case, which I must shout out one of our patrons, Callum Mates, who first brought to my attention on a Zoom call we had last week. So, Todd Boehly co-owns the baseball team, the Los Angeles Dodgers, and they've just bought Shohei Ohtani, a Japanese baseball player. And here's some eye-watering numbers for you about this deal. It's a 10-year deal worth $700 million in wages.
Yep.
So that's what, $70 million
a year,
which what does that put you on? Like 1.4 million a week or something?
A bit less. But yeah, over $1 million a week.
Okay. But the kicker to the deal is not just the staggering money involved, it's the fact that the player has agreed to defer 97% of his salary for a decade. According to The Athletic, he will bank his last check for $68 million in 2043. This is Todd Boehly and his mates and more creative accounting. There's loopholes here. And again, there is nothing in this deal that particularly says, as far as I can find, that this is illegal.
Yeah, American sports is just awash with money. They don't care about this kind of stuff.
So
whatever.
You might be thinking, what's in it for the player to defer the money? Well, a big part of that is tax. So California is obviously very expensive in terms of tax for obviously where Los Angeles is. He takes a nice salary now. Listen, he's not going to be earning badly, quite clearly, even on 3% of that. And obviously, he continues his salary, obviously, going into retirement, and he can go and live somewhere where there's no tax or something, in theory.
Indeed.
What's in that for the baseball team? I'd have to do more digging.
You get the player.
You get the player. I don't know in terms of the loopholes of, like, financials, if there's restrictions in the way that
I don't think there is.
FFP.
I don't think there is.
In our world.
I think the baseball leagues and the NBA and stuff are less powerful than the Premier League, for example. The clubs are more powerful.
Obviously, now that vote's gone through last week, that now can't happen here. Chelsea can't buy a player and do that now.
Yeah, they can.
How can they do that?
Because that's his salary. That's not the transfer fee.
So you think they could do that?
For a salary, they could.
Jesus Christ.
For a salary, they could. But not for a transfer fee. But obviously, salaries are far... Like, 100 grand a year players are 5 million a year salary, right? So it's not going to be as impactful as a transfer fee, which could be 100 million, for example. But they could do that. They could say, right, okay, you're 100 grand a week for 5 years, but you'll get a kicker at the end. It's no different to like image rights, kickers and all that kind of stuff, lump sums at the end. Salaries, they can do what they like.
90% of a salary is a little bit different.
But in that year that they had to then pay the lump, they could get fucked, right? Because they've got a massive outgoing on their P&L. And salaries, you can't amortize. Salary will be in the year that you pay it.
Yep.
So it doesn't make sense to give yourself one big headache 5 years down the line. Whereas they don't have salary caps and regulations and stuff. So it doesn't matter for them. They can spend whatever the fuck they like, which is obviously $700 million.
I suppose part
of the
thinking here is with the way inflation's going, etc., that the value of what they're paying the player will not be as much when it's paid as it is now.
Yep.
That's part of thinking. Let's be honest, how many years are we away from a £300 million transfer? Like, we're going to get there. Mm-hmm. How far are we away from the billion? We're going to get there. So that might be something else the Premier League. The Premier League will be aware of that, that this has happened with Todd Boehly. And to be honest, to repeat this, and everyone knows I've got no love lost for Chelsea, but essentially all they've done is be a little bit creative. Now, whether this creativity comes back to bite them does probably now begin to be determined by on-field performance.
Agreed.
The Super League.
Yes.
So, we had this announcement yesterday from the European Court of Justice, if I got that right.
ECJ.
Yeah, is that you guys? So they basically said, cut a long story short, that FIFA and UEFA cannot stop Florentino Perez and his cronies from organising their new competitions. Oh my God, fear, shit yourselves. The Super League's back on the agenda.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
It is.
It is.
Go.
It is.
Go.
The European Court of Justice, I wasn't a Brexiteer, James. I wasn't for us leaving the European Union. Because there were a lot of benefits to being part of the EU. But there were also a lot of things from the EU that annoyed people a lot. And where they used to try and standardise things across Europe used to annoy people, right? Where it's like, well, all the countries are different. And there are certain times that the European Union and the court and the court system and stuff used to do things because it kind of felt like they were just justifying the fact that they existed. We're like, oh, let's get involved with this industry, like farming or something, just kind of to prove that they stick their nose in because they need something to do with their time. And again, this is one of those examples where I think they've come to a ruling almost as much as, I don't think they've taken into account the context of football. They've just looked at it very black and white on what the law might be. But so be it. I think they've actually probably made the right decision in that it shouldn't be that you have to go through FIFA, then UEFA, then your national body and whatever your league is to play football. It shouldn't be that there's only one pyramid of football in the world. It's not fair. You either, because then how else are you going to make it elsewhere? Now, this is your choice whether you go into it, right? A good example, a good parallel is my favourite sport, MMA, UFC, right? UFC is by far the biggest organization for MMA in the world. They've got the most fighters, maybe 700 fighters. They have the most events. They have the highest level of production quality, everything. If you said, most people call that sport UFC. They don't call it MMA. It's like calling football the Premier League. To make it in that sport, you kind of have to go, is the UFC the only one? Actually, there is a couple others now, PFL and stuff, that pay fighters a lot more money. But everything else is shit. But
they've got a monopoly.
They've got, it's not a monopoly because they're not the only provider, but they've got a real big, yeah, they've got a vast majority dominant position in it. Doesn't mean you can't go and make a fighting as an MMA fighter in another competition because there was Bellator, it's PFL, there's Cage Warriors, there's this, there's that. And all right, you might get 10, 5 grand a fight or something, whereas UFC, you're going to get 100 grand. But you have choice. If you don't like the UFC and you want to go somewhere else, you have choice. Right now, we don't have choice, right? You have to play in the Premier League, under the FA, part of UEFA, and under FIFA. And they dictate and dominate everything, like where all the money goes, who gets the selling rights for the TV and all that kind of stuff, the rules of the competition. Cool. What if you don't want to be part of their competition?
Then don't be part of the competition.
Exactly that. But then there's nowhere, you can't go elsewhere right now because then they're saying, well, you don't, you go there, you're not going to be able to come here. Cool. Good. Open it up because I think competition will only make to sharpen UEFA and FIFA.
Agree with this bit.
Yeah. So they need to get better. Now,
and they're no saints, right? But by the way, whatever the defence is here, it's not a UEFA FIFA defence. You know, slamming Perez doesn't mean you're like pro UEFA or pro FIFA, by the way.
No, 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 no. Perez has obviously got this real desperation to have some sort of legacy that's maybe greater than Bernabeu or something like that. He wants to have some sort of legacy and he's really trying hard to make it happen. And in answer to your question, is it back? I think it is, but I think this is a slow burn. I think this is one of those where it might start out with 6 teams as a summer competition or something like that. But
we have this sort of shit every year anyway.
8 teams, but I think it's going to gather momentum. And the thing is, it's not one of those where they're going to get 20 teams and it's going to start with a bang. I think it's going to take a little bit of time, a few fringe clubs. I think the likes of the Premier League clubs, all of the big clubs that have come out and said, we're not going to join it, that was obviously going to be the response from all of them. But behind closed doors, I think they're like, oh, this is interesting. Let's just wait and see what happens, is my attitude, is what I think they're going to do. And then after a couple of seasons, when a rival competition starts, which it will, then people might start jumping ship. The likes of a Chelsea now, for example, right? Their chances of getting European football is pretty shit. They may as well join next year if there was a Super League. They're not in a fucking UEFA competition, are they?
Okay.
So the likes of a West Ham, let's say West Ham, we don't get UEFA competition, right? So this Super League's going to start. The likes of the top six are not going to join for PR public reasons, but there's money there. And then West Ham say, fine, we're going to go. And we get £100 million for rights for some shit for one season or whatever. The other clubs are not going to look at that and say, oh, fuck, I want a piece of that money. They're all greedy. They all will. But I don't think it will happen that quick. I think this is now the start of something. But in 10 years from now, we will see the Super League, for example. And it will chip away and we'll get a club or two or a club or two. There is one, excuse me, massive elephant in the corner, James. The Saudis.
This I agree with.
Because they did it with LIV Golf. And those of you that may not know about golf, they just started a rival competition to the PGA. Fuck it. And they started playing the players shitloads of money. And they all went over there. And then the PGA had to just shit themselves and merge with LIV. They had enough money to fuck up that whole competition. And golf is a very, very, very wealthy and rich sport with long traditions, blah-de, blah-de, fucking blah. They didn't give a fuck when money came into it. But it kind of goes against... We're rallying against UEFA and FIFA, so let's just get into bed with the nation state. It's not freedom. It's not freedom. It's not power to the people, is it, really?
No, it's not.
But to kickstart the Super League, what the Super League will need is money. To make it attractive for the clubs to join...
JP Morgan was originally promising the $3.5 billion back in 2021.
They'd source it and find it and whatever. There are plenty of people that will now start... sticking their head out of the woodwork.
The Saudis will pay that. It's not...
Well, this is it, so what do you do then?
This is what is different.
If West Ham were not in Europe and we got offered 50 million to go into the Super League and it was side by side with the Premier League and the FA Cup, I would have no problem with them going. If it was side by side with...
Get that. This is what is different to 2 years ago is what's happened with Saudi Arabia. And their investment into not just football, but as you said, LIV Golf and other sports as well. So this is where Real Madrid and Barcelona need to go.
Yeah.
To go to them. Now, in terms of a Super League, if you go to them and get them to fund it, etc., and I think it's perhaps sold as a World Super League rather than a European Super League. So I don't know, maybe if you want to start approaching the best clubs in like Japan and stuff, and perhaps the MLS... Australia, Africa, South America. I think South America, if you would start going to like your Boca Juniors and your River Plates and stuff like
Luminese,
that.
Did they beat City yesterday? No.
It's today.
Oh, it's not.
Then, you know, you're pulling some names. If you start pulling your Bocas, your Rivers and some of the Brazilian clubs, you're pulling in some names of football heritage and stuff. And I agree with you. There are a number of clubs who would be open to perhaps joining Real Madrid and Barcelona, which are... Juventus supposedly in the summer said basically that's it, we're out.
But the Super League.
But I think they can be brought back to the table. Supposedly Fabrizio Romano said on the podcast last night, thank you Matt Stewart for tipping me off, that Napoli would be very interested in participating in a Super League, which of course at the moment is being coined as a European Super League. However, there's nothing super about a tournament that definitely will not have the Manchester clubs, Tottenham, Chelsea, Celtic, Seville, Valencia, Atletico Madrid, Real Sociedad, Villarreal, Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund, PSG, Lyon, Monaco, Inter Milan, Roma, Atalanta, Fenerbahce, Galatasaray, Porto, Feyenoord, the best club in Austria, Red Bull, Salzburg, and the best club in Denmark, Copenhagen, who have all said, and that was just a list that I pulled out last night, have all said... We won't be interested in this. will be confirmed by UEFA. And in any case, my opinion is, even you don't need that list, a European Super League without Bayern Munich and Dortmund, Paris Saint-Germain, and to be honest, Lyon and Monaco, and the English clubs, ain't nobody's fucking Super League. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, but it will eventually. I suppose this is not just about the Super League though, James. Take a step back though. This is about any football competition. UEFA and FIFA do not have the monopoly rights. I mean, this was a European Court of Justice ruling, so we're talking about European competition, I guess. Actually, it's against UEFA, so I don't even know why I'm saying FIFA. FIFA's not part of this, right? I don't know where you would go, maybe The Hague or some shit, I don't know, for World Court, like UN Court for challenging FIFA. I don't know. Someone who's legal might know better than me. But this is European. So any competition can get started. So good. Like, they've tried to create the Conference League to give some other clubs a chance. But if you're a Crystal Palace or Wolves or Brentford, who don't get European competition, and someone wants to start a lesser competition to allow these clubs to have European football that's not UEFA, so what? Let them do it.
Fine.
And so I think we get fixated on it.
We're basically just calling this then a fourth European competition that's not under the umbrella of UEFA.
Any competition that wants to be created that's not under UEFA's umbrella. Yeah. Yeah.
But you'd need interest and you need eyes on it. Yeah. So...
What if the Premier League said we're going to break away from UEFA?
But they're not.
But what if they said we would? If La Liga and the Premier League said, right, we're still the Premier League, we're still doing everything as we are, but we're not affiliating ourselves as under UEFA's umbrella. So fuck off, UEFA. And say they all did that. What power does UEFA have now? Because then they could all start their own European competition.
Have you seen...
And off you go.
As was described on Slack yesterday, and I quite agree with this, the airline presentation from A22, the group behind the Super League, which was released yesterday, of what their competition would look like.
Yeah, I don't really think there's a lot to... That's just fucking marketing. It's like...
It does look like it's something Ryanair put together.
Yeah, it's not going to be like that. I think this is just the very, very, very first step in a long road.
So, Perez's vision, okay, of the whole Super League, remember, the clubs, the 15 clubs, which included our six bastards from our own country, who originally wanted to join the competition. The idea behind that was it was going to be like a 20-team tournament, right, with these 15 guaranteed teams, and there'd be like five invites, right? And other than Bayern, PSG, it was kind of a best of the best biggest clubs around Europe, and Dortmund as well, I suppose. This now looks at like 64 teams, etc., where it's being sold, by the way, as enter the competition on merit. Bullshit, look at it. There's like 40 guaranteed places in there, basically. And even if one of them did drop out, they'd get back in on the merit. Now, Perez's idea, I know what you're saying about you can invite, with respect, your West Hams, your Brentfords, your Palaces and stuff like that. Listen, to be honest, West Ham is at the moment is an established European name, so it's not actually fair.
Mate, we've only lost like three games in 3 years in Europe, mate. Champions of Europe.
We shouldn't actually put West Ham in that conversation at the moment, because you could win Europa League this year and you might be in the Champions League.
Yeah, I get that. But
Palace, Brentford, I get, if you want to kind of put those kind of clubs in there. Perez's vision for Real Madrid is not to be playing fucking Palace and Brentford.
No. No. But this is gonna come down to money. Ultimately, like, I could foresee a situation where, and don't get me wrong, there's always teams that fuck up and don't do well in their domestic league, like Chelsea or Ajax were doing shit, or there might be someone lower league who's still got a bit of a name that you can pull into a competition for marketing. When, say, the Super League started next year and there was some Saudi money in it, and Chelsea finished 10th in the Premier League, but went to the Super League and made more money from that than Man City did in the Champions League, for example. Man City are going to be like, what the fuck? And this is when it's going to start becoming interesting. This is not a now. This is in 10 years from now, we will see this Super League. I'm convinced in 10 years, maybe 15, we will see it. But it's going to take another 2 or 3 years now of like wrangling, where it's like, where's the money come from? Who's going to join? Who's not going to join? What's it going to look like? How do we get it to happen? Maybe a few trial matches. Maybe they'll do some exhibition stuff if it is Saudi or somewhere else that funds it. And then finally, you'll get to 6 to 8 teams that are traditional and established that will join the first inaugural competition, see shitloads of money, and then everyone else will start fucking piling in. It will take time. But the fact that they've said it's legal, 100% is, it will eventually happen. Money talks, mate. This is like UEFA have their fingers in everybody's bank accounts. No one wants to be paying money to UEFA. How much money do UEFA and FIFA have? Shitloads, mate. Mm. Shitloads.
Oh, yeah. Again, we're not defending either of these two.
They're
companies.
Taking the rights, the TV rights, whether they're spreading it evenly or fairly or what is a big debate. So I think this is interesting because it now opens up football to, I say, free market. It was already a free market. But without UEFA and FIFA's fingers in the pies, we could see $700 million 10-year contracts for players and stuff, man.
I think, I mean, we could go round in circles forever on this conversation, but I think to park close for now, it's interesting you mentioned 10 years.
Yeah.
Because I absolutely agree that that's the minimum before this would become a serious concern for anyone. And there's a very, very clear reason for that. Where do you think the money's coming from that could fund this and compete against the Champions League? It's Saudi Arabia.
Has to be.
Right.
Maybe America or... There's nowhere else with enough money. We're talking BNs, no. James, not MNs.
It is exactly what's happened with the likes of LIV Golf. It is Saudi Arabia. What's Saudi Arabia doing in 2034, Suj?
World Cup.
Under FIFA's umbrella.
It's true.
So there's no incentive for Saudi Arabia to start this up now in the next 10 years.
No.
None.
But they'll have, in 10 years, they'll have Stadia.
Right, how old is Perez, with respect?
Fuck no, 75? 75? I don't know.
Keep waiting, boy.
Yeah. I do get that, but they're building Stadia there and stuff. I kind of felt like they might try and have the tournament there. They've got the teams that like try and fly everybody in and stuff. But yeah, I think all it is right now is watch this space. But
there
my personal
going
opinion
to
is
going to
happen.
No competition under a Saudi Arabia-funded umbrella in the next, well, between now and 2034. It's not going to happen. I would suspect if there was any indication it was even going to start up around 2036 or 2037, they'd get the tournament pulled straight out of them.
We shall see.
Can't see that happening. Honestly, can't. By the time we get to this point as well, in terms of from a money perspective, people don't like the new format of the Champions League. Who knows? We might all decide that we like it. I think that runs to, what, 2029 or something. Maybe then the format will be itself that it's 64 teams or 128 teams and enough teams get in under a different format with more money that it just keeps pushing a Super League thing to a different place. I absolutely agree with you, Suj, in terms of the financials of using a Chelsea example. But I also think we'll get to the point probably by 2030 or so where probably, let's say, the big 7 or 8 or whatever it is by that point in the Premier League are probably getting in the Champions League every year.
Well, this is it. I think next year's really interesting case where we've got the new Champions League. Let's see how that operates and works and how that has an impact on clubs from a financial point of view.
The biggest clubs in Europe at the moment that are missing out on the Champions League are the English clubs. The English clubs don't want any part of a rebranded new tournament because they know, because of what happened a couple of years ago, they've got anarchy on their hands if it happens. So, I mean, to be honest, you use the Chelsea reference, right? Every single one of us owes a thank you to the Chelsea fans that night and what they did.
True.
Right? And don't think it wouldn't happen. No Chelsea fan, proper Chelsea, I mean, proper Chelsea fan who goes to the games regularly and is involved in that, there's no way that, say, Chelsea finish ninth and they finish out of Europe, and then it's like, right, go and join this competition with Barcelona and Real Madrid and you can earn all this money. You think Chelsea fans aren't going to blow again? They will.
They will indeed.
So there's no involvement from the English clubs as well. Also, from the money perspective here, and part of a regulator, what I'd mentioned, a lot of people harp on all the time about, the six clubs who tried to break away, you know, why didn't they get punished in, say, the way Everton's got punished now, etc. I completely agree, right? They should have had the book thrown at them. But one of the reasons it wasn't was they signed a fucking deal with a promise of never do it again.
Yep.
And under a regulation, there is no way that any English club is going to be allowed to join this sort of competition without giving permission. So we could say, oh, Brentford get invited to join this and they can earn 100 million by doing it. Once the regulation's in place, they ain't going to be a fucking allowed to do it. That's 100%.
Good, good. Okie dokie. Patrons, thank you so much for your support. It's Friday. We will be recording before Christmas, so I will wish you a Merry Christmas in case you don't listen to the Diff Show on Sunday. But if you do listen to that, well, then you can hold fire for your Merry Christmas. Enjoy the weekend. I hope you got your Christmas shopping done. Stay safe. Look after yourselves. Ciao for
Thanks,
now.
Everyone. Happy Crimbo. Cue music, please, man child.
Fantasy Football Show.